Hello, everybody. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author to Author, where we talk about writing and life. You really can't separate them, people, because what it takes to write the book you want to write is also what it takes to lead the life you want to lead. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as video and audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. You can find Author Magazine at authormagazine.org, and we're funded by the Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. You can learn more about the PNWA if you go to pnwa.org. We've got a contest. I believe it's already begun. Every year there's a writing contest, and I'm going to say a little bit more about that in a moment. At the Pacific Northwest Writers Conference that we hold every summer here in the Seattle area, down in SeaTac, and winning those awards, boy, I'll tell you, it is often worth it for authors. Many of the writers I know go on to get agents and publishing contracts from participating in that contest, and it's a good one, and you get feedback. Exposure, it's just worth it. If you want to enter that, we've got many, many genres. We've got literary fiction, poetry, suspense, romance, short story, memoir. Really, we cover the whole gamut. You can learn more about it at pnwa.org. I will say that tomorrow night, that will be November 18th at 7 o'clock, I will be at East West Books in Ravenna, here in Seattle, Washington. And I host the Authors Roundtable. Come down there, and we talk about all things that come up in an author's life, all the various challenges, not so much about craft. We're not going to critique your work. We're just going to talk about the many stories we tell about the stories we tell. We're going to talk about talent, intelligence, creativity, sharing our work, the unique challenges of being an author, sharing your work with other people, this thing you write in the privacy of your own home, of your own desk, going and sharing it with other people. It creates a unique tension in a creative person's life, and that's what we're going to talk about. And if anyone can come, if you want to come, you can come. It's open to anyone. You can sign up now at East West Books, or you can just walk in and pay when you get there. So I'll be there, Authors Roundtable, tomorrow, 7 o'clock, East West Books in Seattle's Ravenna District. Okay, as I said, PNWA, yes. Today's writer, author, Chris Patchell, kind of, I don't want to say really got her start. She got her start in third grade like a lot of writers. That's when she knew she wanted to do it. But one of the motivating factors in her going from someone writing for herself and now sharing with other people is that she entered that contest I was mentioning, the PNWA, and she won. And she went on to publish her first book, Deadly Lies, which won the Indie Readers Discovery Award. And she's just published, or this past August, published In the Dark, her second book. And she's a fabulous local writer, and I can't wait to talk to her. So I'm going to do it. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Bill. It's a pleasure being here.
Chris. So here we are in blustery Seattle. we're chatting, and the readers or listeners can't possibly know this, but you're talking to me from your work. You like a lot of writers, you lead two lives, at least two, have a day job, as we said, career.
Exactly.
A secretive career. We can't say what it is, but you work in the high-tech industry. At night, you write your book. So, and you're actually at your job as you do this interview.
So, I am. I'm looking out over Lake Union, and there's a bunny rabbit in the courtyard, and the trees are blowing in the wind. It's a perfect day.
a bunny rabbit. That might be Rabbit from Winnie the Pooh's Blustery Day out trying to – okay. We won't
it could
go
be,
so
or it could be like Monty Python. I'm not going to go out and check.
Let's not go there. All right. So balancing your creative life and your working life, you're also a mom, are you not?
I am. Yeah, I've got two kids, and they're, right, you know, middle school age. Yeah.
All right. So, busy woman. So talk about balancing that, because I'll tell you, Chris, when I go and I teach, and I often talk to people, I teach a class called Fearless Writing, where we talk a lot about just all the many emotional and mental blocks that keep us from writing. Time is a big one. Time is a big one. So you obviously are having to find time. So talk, how do you find that time? How do you do it?
You know, it's a good question, and I struggle with this all the time. I think there's never enough time to write all the things that I have in my head. So how do I do it? I actually schedule time on my calendar, right? So, for example, lunchtimes, I get asked out for lunch all the time. And it's like, nope, I got something to do, right? And I already have a scene that's in my head that I need to write down. And then I do, you know, in the evenings when I can work it in, on weekends I work it in, right? I just find time between all the other things that you have to do to write. It's like I'm totally skipping groceries today because I have a scene to write. So I send my husband and the kids out to do certain things, and they know that it's just me getting heads down. I did also, when I was first starting out, I used to take classes. And so when I stopped taking classes, I took that night that I used to go to class and just stayed late at work and wrote until I was done for that night. So
and
it is one of those things where you just have to prioritize it. You have to do the things you love.
See, now I'll tell you, the conclusion I came to, Chris, is I turn it around on my students and I say, if you're going to try and find time, what I always say to them is, here's the practical answer. Just get up an hour earlier. You know, that's like the mechanical answer. But the real problem is this, is it a waste of time to write, not knowing where it's going to go? You understand? So you went and got your job at this high tech company. You knew when you got that job exactly how much they were going to pay you every week and so on and so forth. But when you started writing when you started writing, say, A Deadly Lies, you didn't know anything. You probably didn't even know how the book was going to end, let alone how you were going to publish it and so on. That I think
I hardly
is the real
knew
trick.
How that thing was going to begin.
That's right. There's so much unknown. Don't you think that's the biggest challenge? Because I think people struggle with that. Am I just pouring all this time and energy into something, and all I know is that I like doing it? Who knows what's going
to happen? I totally agree with that. There were times, you know, early on when I was writing Deadly Lies, I thought to myself, why am I even doing this, right? It's probably not going to go anywhere. And being the type A person I am, I always have kind of an outcome in mind. But what I realized as I was going through the writing process and the publishing process was that it was something that I loved to do so much, and the creative energy I got from doing it kind of spilled over into all the different parts of my life. So whether it was going anywhere or not, I found it very fulfilling, and it made me better at, you know, my day job. It made me better at home, right? It just made me a happier person. And so no matter where it was going, I knew that it was a good thing for me, and I had to continue to feed that in whatever way I needed to. I needed to balance my life, so I always worked it in, because it was just such an essential part of who I became after I started writing.
See, that's a great answer. You were in the moment. I think writing calls us to be in the present moment. And if you start thinking about outcomes, you really, you can't do it. You just can't do it.
You can't control where it goes, right? And as soon as you try to control where it goes or start thinking that way, I find it really starts to impede your creativity, right? It's kind of it's one of those things where recently I had to say to myself, I can't control how any of this goes, so I just need to not even think about that so I can just finish the first draft of the next book, right? And so that's what I did. I shut it off.
Well, but it's really good because my wife actually came up with this metaphor. She said, you know, because she's a creative person also, and she said, the canvas is in the present moment. You can't paint on the past. It's not, there's no canvas there. There's no canvas in the future. So if you want to make something, you have no choice but to focus on where you, even if you're writing a fictional world like you do or write memoir like I do, it's still, you know, you're still having to create, be in the present moment. And as soon as you start worrying where it's going, it just drains all your creative power out of what you're doing, really.
I totally agree. It's exhausting, right? And then the work doesn't come alive like it needs to. You're so busy worrying about stuff that you can't do anything about that it just drains you. You just got to stick with it and go with it and believe that it's going to end up wherever it needs to. And that, you know, I think one of the things that it was hard for me to accept at the beginning of my writing journey was you know, not being able to control the outcome. And if it didn't go where I wanted it to, then I would never get where I wanted to be. And now, you know, looking back several years and a couple books later, it's actually more of a stepping stone path than a direct path.
Yeah.
You know, I think we all start our first book and think, okay, I want an agent and I want a publishing deal and I want it to hit the bestseller chart. And if it doesn't, I've failed, right? But now, you know, I've gone through the indie path, which was interesting, and I learned a lot from that. And I have an Amazon publishing contract and an agent now, right? So I'm on that kind of hybrid path. And I look and go, these are all stepping stones to where I want to eventually be. And I will get there. I just need to put one foot in front of the other, do the right things for now, you know, keep that creativity flowing, write the best book that I can that pleases me, and hopefully that'll find an audience and take me to that next step, wherever that next step leads.
And when you say Amazon Publishing, is that through Thomas and Mercer?
No, it's actually through Kindle Press. So
tell me about Kindle Scout.
Yeah.
Was that what the so tell me what that is.
Okay, so when I was finishing the second book, I was working with a marketing gal out of the Andrea Hirst Literary Agency who was helping with my first book. And so she said, so what are you planning to do with your second book? And I'm like, you know, I just want to finish it before I kill myself, you know, because when you're in that editing loop, it feels like it's never going to be done. So she says, you know, are you thinking agent? I said, yeah, I thought agent, you know, I could do indie again because I've been fairly successful with that within the dark. And she said, have you ever heard of Kindle Scout? And I said, no, right? So I looked it up, and what it is a new publishing program through Amazon that uses kind of a crowdsourcing model to identify books that they think or new authors that they think are talented, right, and kind of give them a leg up when it comes to marketing. And so I thought long and hard about it, and I thought, the indie path, you do all of your marketing yourself, and you can build a platform and you can get ahead, but it's hard, right? And then getting through the front door of a traditionally published novel or house is hard too, right? You have to go through the whole query and find the right agent and da-da-da-da-da. And then this Amazon opportunity was intriguing for me because I thought about, you know, that big, beautiful Amazon marketing engine and how something like that could take a book like mine and bring it to the next level, right? So kind of the best of both worlds. And so I decided to give it a whirl. So it's kind of a simple process, right? You upload your manuscript. They expose, I think, the first 5,000 words, maybe more than that, of your 25,000 of your manuscript, and let readers vote on the books that they should think should be published. And so that campaign lasts for like 30 days.
Okay.
And so every day you're like, I'm
kind
not
of love
trending.
It and I kind
oh
of
crap,
hate it,
I'm not.
Okay.
I know, right?
Okay.
So at the end of it, right they your campaign finishes and they tally the stats or whatever they do, but they also read your book and they decide which ones they think are know, the right books for them. So there's a couple part process in it. There's the crowdsourcing part where, hey, if you've got a lot of friends, you could potentially get down that track, but they actually do quality control at the end to say, are these books that we think have a market? Are these books that we think are well-crafted enough, right, to make the cut? So yay. Mine was selected at the end of that.
Congratulations.
And then it was so exciting. I have to admit, I had goosebumps. It was so exciting.
Well, I will tell
and
you.
And Amazon has done a great job.
I have no doubt about that. I have two friends. One of whom I think is quoting you've blurbed on the very front of your book, Mr. Degoni.
Yeah.
He uses Thomas and Mercer, which is, for people who don't know, is Amazon's what you might call their traditional publishing model, but it's done through Amazon. And I also friends with Megan Chance, who uses, I don't know what the imprint that she's at there, but both have moved from traditional New York publishers to Amazon. And are really thriving because they both write in the genres like you, and genres sell primarily ebooks now.
Exactly.
I mean, I think that's a big, and they just get the marketing in. I mean, obviously they have, it's their store, so it's even easier, but they get it on certain levels. And Bob didn't want to market and Megan didn't want to market. And I probably, you know, you have a business background, but really I would imagine if you could choose, you'd rather write than market.
Oh yeah. You know, this is my creative space. My author stuff is my creative space, and I would much rather write than market.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah. Well,
absolutely.
That's awesome.
And Amazon does it amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. They get it. They know how to do it.
Yeah.
And that's now. So these are both are suspense novels, and I assume the book that you was it In the Dark that you uploaded, or is it the third book that got scouted?
In the Dark.
Okay, so
that's
In the Dark
the one
will be
that got
released.
Scouted.
Okay, this being released through there, and are they going to do they then edit it and redo the covers and all that, or is it really just as is?
They do assign an editor. So
okay.
Good. On this particular book, I did hire my own editor, and as painful
right.
as that was,
we went
through the process,
yeah.
and the book got better as a result. And so after it was selected for publication, they do have an editing team, and I worked with an editor there who, you know, actually caught a couple of really good things that I had missed on my last read-through, and I was glad that she caught them. So there were, you know, line edits, of course. Do you want to play the game of like 10,000? Yeah. Where does your comma go?
right.
All right. Yes, I'll move it there. Yeah. That's fine. Right. But then they also had some. You know, they found one thing in my timeline. I had moved a chapter ahead, and they realized that it doesn't fit in there. It fits back there. And I went, oh yeah, you're right. Good catch. I wouldn't have caught that because I'd read it so many times.
All right. So
there are
a few
things like that they caught too.
All right. Good. Well, that's awesome. You know, I do like how you talked about, and I think this is important for, I can't remind myself of it often enough, Chris, which is that stepping stone model, because so many of my own sort of opportunities that have come up were things that I could never have planned, but because I put myself out there and made myself available and pursued the things that I was interested in, these things came up eventually. And so I just think that there is a control what you can control and trust that more will come. Right.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And what you said there is very critical. Being able to open yourself up to opportunities because you don't know where those paths will lead you. And it may unlock some door, right, that becomes really important for you later on. But you have to kind of put yourself out there and be willing to take a couple risks in order to do that. And some of them are going to work out and some of them may not. But that's okay because you learn something from each of those steps. And that helps
it's
you
really
become,
true.
Right, who you want to be.
Yeah. So true. I have a caller. The number is mysterious. It seems to be blocked in some way. So let's see. Hello, caller. You're on the air. Hello.
Hey. Hi, Chris. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Very good.
Who am I talking to?
This is Brian from Albuquerque.
Hi, Brian.
How are you?
Good.
I'm a big fan of Chris's work. I think she's beautiful. I think her work is phenomenal, and I just wanted to call and say how much I love it and, you know, keep doing great things. We appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm busy writing something creepy and dark right now. So if you like my work, you'll love that.
Very good. And like I said, I do enjoy your work. And you are beautiful. I just wanted to tell you that. I love you so much.
Thank you.
Oh, that's nice. Well, so, Chris, you seem like such a nice person. Why are you writing these creepy books? what's all
you know,
that about?
It's a great question. I was helping out in a fourth grade class a couple weeks ago. I do this every year because I work with this teacher that is just phenomenal at teaching the publishing process and writing to kids.
Mm-hmm.
And that so inspires me. So she called me back this year and said, hey, would you do it again? I'm like, love to. And so one of the fourth grade students, cute little girl, looks at me and goes, why do you write the books you do? And I'm thinking, oh, yeah, I need to talk to my therapist about that. I don't know.
I kind of
look at it as my alter ego, right? So I'm this nice Canadian girl on the surface, and I have a lot of dark things going on in the back of my head. I find it very cathartic to kill people on paper. True confession.
Well, you know Kevin O'Brien, right?
Oh, I love Kevin, yes.
Right. Kevin, I've had Kevin on the show a couple times. He's, as I say, he's the nicest writer of serial killer novels I've ever met, and he couldn't be sweeter, but he said he went with Jenny Shortridge, the novel, who's a friend of his, the novelist Jenny Shortridge,
yes.
to see her hairdresser, who is a – has he told you the story about the time the woman who reads auras? Oh, this is hilarious. She reads auras, and so she went to – she was going to give a free aura reading to Kevin, but she didn't know what Kevin did for a living. She didn't know anything about Kevin. And she said, oh, you're very bright aura, very, very light aura, but – and then she looked at him and she said, And you know, Kevin writes at night. You know, he writes these serial killer novels, and he always writes from, like, I don't know what it is, 11 to 4 a.m. or something like that. And she said, but
it's crazy. Yeah.
There's an evil little man who comes in through the cracks in your feet at night. Who is that little man? Kevin said, that little man makes me money. So, you know.
Oh, man, that's perfect.
And Chelsea Kane is the same way. She's down in Oregon. She writes these, you know, serial killer novels, and she is like a ray of sunshine, and yet she only writes these very dark. So you're just part of a whole group of people who are as sweet as sugar on the surface and a little salt underneath it.
I blame it on Seattle traffic. I spend a lot of time in Seattle traffic, and probably 90% of that time I'm thinking about murder. I'll be honest.
Now, you say that as a joke. It's so not true. But I mean, I know that Seattle traffic will inspire murder, but you must have had some interest in, because you started writing romance novels once upon a time back a number of years ago.
I did.
Right?
So when I was in my 20s, like half of my bookshelf would be Daniel Steele and the other half was Stephen King. And, you know, as I got older, and I wonder if it's tech too, right? The Stephen King side won out.
I was thinking about this just before this interview, and I thought, you know, I think the romance writer, I think as the cheerleader is to the football player, so the romance writer is to the suspense writer. I feel like there's some kind of, even though they seem so different, I feel like there's some spiritual, although obviously suspense writers are men and women, whereas romance writers are mostly women. But there's some kind of like spiritual, mostly, not all, there is a kind of spiritual connection there. I can't quite put my finger on it, but I feel like there is, it doesn't surprise me one would move from one to the other.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the things to be a good writer of any genre, relationships and understanding people and being able to craft relationships in interesting ways and deep ways in a book is important. And I think that's something that good romance writers do very well. And so something that we can all take a look at and go, how did you build, you know, that relationship in such a short period of time, but yet it resonates with me as a reader?
Yeah. Well, you got to do the same thing, too, in suspense, because it's easy, I think, to get caught up in just the next exciting event, the next exciting event, the next exciting event. But you got to care about these people who might or might not die, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I spent a lot of time actually and in the dark working on that, right? So for me, plot always comes first. I always think about the story in terms of what happens, right? But in the dark, I spent a lot of time working on the characters and making sure that the characters were deep and believable and that their motivations and their backstories, there was just enough of that to draw you in and kind of connect you to those characters so that as they're going through the book and as these terrible things are happening, like, hey, windstorms and rains and floods and mudslides, you know, the stuff that happens in the Northwest this time of year, you care and want them to, you want them to win at the end of the book.
Yeah, you got to care about the people. Somebody said, I think every author I know says that, you know, really just to separating plot and character in a way, I think suspense writers have a tendency to separate these two things a little bit because they often, I think suspense writers think in high concept, you know, like the typical cinematic high concept. But in the end, character, I think, has to drive the plot. It has to because the people have to want to do what they're doing. I mean, it's the people's motivation has to be central to their actions.
That's right. Motivation.
That makes sense.
Right. And being able to give them backstory and motivation, right, to bring them to the next thing. Because let's face it, we suspense writers put you through awful things, put our characters through awful, awful things, right?
Yeah.
So they have to have enough motivation and grit to be able to get through it.
John Irving, I just saw him. It's a great, if you like interviews, he did a great interview, short, but it was a lot of fun with Stephen Colbert. He was on the Colbert show. I wanted to call it The Rapport, but it's Stephen Colbert's thing. And he said, it's very simple what I do. I create someone I love. I create a character I love, and then I think of the worst possible thing that could happen to them. It's kind of a really great way to structure a story. What's the worst thing that could happen to them?
Yeah, I remember I was editing in the dark, and it's like, okay, this is all right, but how can I make it worse? Right. And
that's right.
And I get this look on my face and my editor says, what? And I'm like, you're not going to believe this. He says, I already love it. And so I remember getting a text from a friend of mine who just read that scene and went, oh, my God, I can't believe he just did that. And it's like, well, you know. That
it's
happens.
Fun to do it to the fictional character. You know, it's funny. In our lives, we want everything to go smoothly. We never want problems.
Yeah.
We never want to be low on money. We never want to lose power. We never. And yet, what would we do without it as writers? We would have nothing to write about. We would never wish. That would be a nightmare for the writer, not the other
exactly.
way around.
Exactly. I was teaching my youngest daughter, about, you know, she was writing a story and everybody's happy and nothing's going wrong. And I'm like, okay, well, you know, that's actually not what fiction's about, right? Let's put in a couple obstacles. What bad things could happen? And so she tells me, okay, well, this could happen. And I write it down. Okay, what would be like the worst thing that could happen now, right? So she tells me and I'm like, okay, let's put that in, right? And then suddenly it went from being, you know, kind of dull to like 5 pages of awesomeness, right? And she's like, wow, that was a lot of fun. And that's what I love about kids. Their imaginations are so open.
Yeah, boy, I'll tell you, Picasso said, every child is an artist, and then we teach it out of them. And so Picasso said he felt, as an adult, he had to learn to draw like a child again, because he felt he had sort of trained it out of himself.
And don't you find that as a writer, too? I know when I'm writing, I'll take some safe moves at the beginning and then probably catch those and redo it in the edit phase, right, to make it bigger. But there were times when I was finishing off In the Dark, right, it's got some pretty gritty characters and some pretty gritty scenes. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, my mother's going to read this.
Yeah.
Maybe I need to dial it back. And it's like, no, but it's true to the character, so I need to leave it in. But it's hard not editing yourself and taking all of that stuff out.
You can't. You cannot. I think all the challenges writers face, I mean, you have to get through the basic craft stuff, and you've got to learn the many ways that you want to tell a story and what works for you and what doesn't and all that kind of stuff. But you can learn that stuff.
Right.
I think the number one obstacle for most of the writers I know, both experienced and inexperienced, is the thought of other people. That as soon as you are at the desk and you begin to think about those other people in any way other than the thought of, like, how can I make this understandable to someone who isn't me? You know, that kind of abstract, how do I translate? That is the number one undoing. And it's a perfectly reasonable thing to be concerned about, because you're an author and you want other people to like it. You know, you want, but you can't think about them. Not in
you
that
way. You can't think about it. Because if
not
you do, right, it's gonna warp your story. It's gonna make a story that
completely
isn't the story that resonates with you. It's got to be you first,
right,
and then hopefully everybody else likes it. I know when I wrote Deadly Lies, it's got a very edgy female protagonist. She's an anti-hero. And I knew that some people are gonna love her, and some people are absolutely going to hate her. You know, I thought about, do I change the story and write it from a different perspective, right? So it's not so edgy. And then I thought, but then it's not the story I wanted to write. And if it's not the story I wanted to write, then what's the point? And so I did it. And, you know, readers love it for the most part. They do complain a little bit about the ending.
They're going to complain no matter what you do. I don't care what you write. Here's something to remember. If you're a music fan, even if you're not a music fan, there's a singer-songwriter named Bob Dylan who wrote a lot of music. It was very popular in the – well, he wrote – his music, his canon was written in the early 60s. That was when he really, you know, kind of changed music. He was booed
Absolutely.
Every night. He was booed because he plugged in. So you
Shocking,
can't
right?
please – yeah. You can't please all the people all the time. Well, all right. So this has been a fabulous conversation, Chris, as I suspected it would be. But all good things must end. But before this does – I want you to answer one more question for me. What I'd like you to do is finish this sentence. If writing has taught me anything, it's taught me what?
It's taught me to be brave and to be myself.
Sometimes being yourself requires the most bravery, doesn't it? Isn't that strange?
It does. To open yourself up and expose yourself, right, in all of your imperfect glory, it's scary, right?
Yeah.
But taking those risks has taught me more than anything else, and I think I've grown as a result, not just as a writer, but as a person too.
I have no doubt. And so, okay, In the Dark, although it's currently available, or is it currently? It was published in August, but it's coming out again. We want our listeners to wait until the Kindle Scout version.
It's out there. The Kindle Scout is out. It was published on August 4th, and so you can just go to Amazon and get it.
Oh, Okay, that I misunderstood. So that is the Kindle Scout book.
Yeah, that's the Kindle Scout book.
Oh, I'm confused. Then go and get it now, everybody. It's available.
Go and get it for lots of greedy fun.
That's right. And I hope you're hard at work on the next one. I know you are.
Indeed I am. I just finished the first draft a couple days ago, and so now I go into the endless editing loop.
Congratulations. Enjoy that endless loop.
Yes. Good things come of it. It's hard work, but I love it.
It is indeed. Well, good luck, and thanks again for being with us today, Chris.
Thanks so much, Bill.
All right. Take it easy.
Bye.
Bye. Be brave, people. Be brave and be yourself. As the humorist once said, you might as well be yourself. Everyone else is taken. So next week, I have Anna Leffler back, author of Preschooled. We had a conversation going a couple of weeks ago, and the internet dropped out. So we had to end our conversation. But she's coming back, and we're going to have a great conversation. Till then, stay warm, stay dry, and be brave and be yourself. What could be worse? What could be worse than being you?